Where we are, we have begun our series with going into some things of the way the world is thinking. That's what God, man, and space was, the way the world is thinking, science and the scriptures. The second time was the way one part of the world is thinking and what its effect is, that is, in biology and the things that are happening where we are out to be controlled by someone else. Or by something. Last time we went into the foundation of the scriptures, and in that we found that the Word of God is authoritative. It is God's Word, and we went into some of the arguments surrounding the authority of Scripture. Now, for the next few times, there are a couple chairs over here, folks. Don't worry about just... See, here comes the choir. I knew the choir would come. Good. Here's your husband over here. You can go across the front. Yeah, we ought to give her a hand for right. Right. Good. Now, for the next three sessions that we're going to have together, we are going to go into some very practical areas as far as your Christian life is concerned. I invite questions and discussion. And there is much more that we can share on this, and I'm going to be covering, as usual, I guess, things fairly quickly for you to try and glean some things, and then it may be that we'll have a little get-together over at my place with another portion of one of these topics sometime in May, since I'll be away during the week and even on Sunday evenings for a good bit of the time in April. Now, it's very interesting that most of us as Christians want to be something. That is, we want to be a good Christian. We want to be a man or a woman whom God really uses. But unfortunately, most of us do not want to become. That is, we want the result, but we do not want the process. You see the difference in that? Because in order to become anything, you have to go through a process, whether it's education, training, whatever it may be. And most of us think of today, next week, but not of next year or of 4 or 5 years down the road, except in very vague terms. And I'm sure that any of you here who are over 30, and there are two or three I noticed in the class, I know that Pastor and Mrs. Smith are over 30, and when many of you look back to your high school years and times of preparation, there were dreams that you had of what you wanted to become. In fact, you could probably remember those dreams. But you also know that it was very difficult to actually reach them. In fact, most of you probably are not doing precisely what you intended to be doing or what you dreamed of doing. Something entered in, any number of things could have come in and kept you from doing it. Not that you should have, but yet there may have been a process that the training period would have been too long, the effort too hard, the reality of doing it simply caused you to stop, and you failed to reach that which you had at first intended. So we have our dreams, and in Christianity we make our commitments, but somehow the reality of the gut-level process of training and becoming a godly person turns us back and we really quit and we give up. I remember that I went down to Fort Benning about 3.5 years ago with the Academy fellows as they went to the paratrooper training. And there is something about it that when you get out there to actually do it, it's different than thinking about it. And one guy, when he was going up a tower, just absolutely froze and passed out and wouldn't jump off or wouldn't even go up the stairs. I think he made it once, and they kicked him out when he didn't go then. And, you know, all of this reality of the process of going through it sort of turns you back. Say, I'm not sure that I want to pay the cost. So I'd like to look for a moment or two at what God's objective is for the world. Why should we be trained? How should we be trained? And what is God's principal objective? Well, God's objective, we see in Matthew 28, 19 and 20, that we are to go into all the world, and we're to make disciples of or in all nations, And then it says, baptizing them, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you, and baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Now, the key there is making disciples. God's objective is worldwide with disciples of His. And so our mission and God's objective is a worldwide objective. But there is one other. How many of you know Romans 8:28? Can I just see your hands? Okay, a lot of you know that all things work together for good to them who love God and to them who are the called according to His purpose. But do you know Romans 8:29, which is right in conjunction? For it says, for whom He did foreknow, them He also did predestinate to become conformed to the image of His Son. Now, God's purpose then is twofold. One is to reach out to the entire world. In fact, I was sitting here this morning listening while I was doing things around with the coffee and so forth, listening to a report of our ministries over in Korea with just some servicemen. Wherever people are, we want to go and to reach them. Now, the second thing is that you are to become like Jesus Christ in His image. Now, that's all nice sounding words, but how do you actually go about doing that? Now, the first portion of what I have to share is not directly on this handout. I don't always put everything on the handout, but it has kind of the core of some things that I'll be sharing with you a little bit later. In order to really look at what God is doing in our lives, I'd like to first consider with you some methods that Jesus used to train His men, and then try and reflect on perhaps what we could do to be trained in our own lives. Okay, now this will be the outline for the next 3 Sundays, and so I'll only give you a brief overview of some of the things that we're going to look at. A key passage in this is Mark 3:14. And you don't need to look it up, but it says He ordained 12 that they might be with Him and that He might send them forth to preach. Did it ever make you wonder why Jesus only picked 12 men? You know, here was the Son of God with all the power and authority given to Him by God. You know, Billy Graham doesn't even work just with 12. You know, He has mass evangelism. Why didn't Jesus use mass evangelism? Okay, there's a very key to what He has done, and it's called why He did what He did, and it's called the principle of concentration. See, if Jesus had been a, quote, Billy Graham, where would you and I be today? You see, He wanted His ministry to last and to propagate through the centuries, not just through the world in that generation. And so had He gone and just had revivals and just preached the gospel to everybody while He was there, there would have been two problems. One is, it would have been limited to His physical abilities because He was the Son of God and was restrained by His physical body. The second is, He would not have died yet, and the church would not really have started. So Jesus Christ, the Son of God, limited Himself to the form of man, as we read in Philippians, and then He Himself trained a core of men who were deeply committed to reach out to the rest of the world. Had Jesus not gone to the principle of concentration, you and I might not be sitting here today. But He took these men and trained them, the few. And even among the 12, who were there? The 3, Peter, James, and John. And apparently He had special things that He did with each one of those. So Jesus was a man who concentrated on a few things. He didn't heal everybody. Did you ever wonder why He didn't heal everybody? He didn't preach to everybody. He didn't give everybody an opportunity to be as close to Him as the 12 were. Now, by the way, the 12 were around Him not just because He went and picked them, but apparently He had 70, maybe even more than 70. Could have been hundreds. In fact, in John 60, it talks of quite a multitude, John 6, verse 60, we have quite a multitude of people that were following Jesus, and they're described as disciples. I won't turn to the passage now, but He came through with some pretty tough teaching. And then it says, from that time forth, many of His disciples walked not with Him. And then He turned and He said to the 12, will you also go away? And they said, Lord, to whom shall we go? For thou hast the words of eternal life. Now you see, Jesus gave every man a choice as to whether or not he was going to be personally committed to him. You have that choice. You have the choice of your personal commitment to Jesus Christ. You first of all have the choice of whether or not you receive Christ as your personal Savior. Secondly, you have the choice of whether or not you will follow Him in Lordship, making a commitment that really lasts. Oh, those are good words, though. See, we use those all the time. So the purpose of the next three Sundays that we're going to be together in the class, that'd be over the next 4 weeks, actually, we're going to try and get down into the things that will help you last on your commitment and prepare for the future. In concentration, perhaps, what do you concentrate on? Are you spread out? Are you in too many activities? Are you too busy? Have you frustrations because you can't quite seem to get it together? Well, we're going to come back to that in a moment. But let me first share some of the other aspects of the things we're going to be talking about, the way Jesus trained his men. Did you notice that Jesus was more concerned about who his people were and what they were inside than what they did? He worked on their character. And so next week we'll be talking about character, whether you're really changing or if you're just doing. The next week we're going to talk about contact, person-to-person contact. I believe I'll put character and contact together in the next time we get together. You know, and basically, are you in contact with God? Is He really working in your life? And then the last one, which I don't have on an overhead here, will be the matter of reality. How do you put all this together where you really live? When you've got a job 40, 50 hours a week, where you're pressed for time, where your family is demanding, where you've got more to do than what you can handle? What if you don't like your job? There's some would probably like to have a job. And in this economic situation, that, of course, is very key. But many times we have these dissatisfactions with our circumstances, if I could only change them. Okay, that's what we're going to talk about, I believe it is April 13th. But for today, I want to come back to this matter of concentration and talk about it with you for just a few moments. Now, when we think of concentration, we have to realize what the power of concentration is. Back in the early 50s or middle 50s, we realized that man from Russia was going to be out in space. And we also realized that we wanted to have the advantage in that science of space area. And so from 1955 through 1970, we had a period of 15 years of fantastic concentration. And I remember when those objectives were set early in that time, and I was working at Cape Kennedy in 1960 and 61, and we were to get man in space. Even though I was right there in the middle of it, I really didn't believe we'd be able to do it that quickly. And within just years, of course, we put a man not only in space, but on the moon. But it cost us very dearly. And if you concentrate on the wrong thing, it costs us in terms of our economy, by the way, and that's part of what we're relating to now in the way the economy is. We had such a push for so many years in the high technology areas, and now we aren't funding defense or space. And so people are out of work, and it affects the whole economy. Now, don't check that out with any economist. He might disagree. That's just my viewpoint at this point. But it does have an effect, and we know how that was when you just focused in on it. But the key is, if you really focus on something, you can do it. There's very little that man cannot do if he really tries. God, in fact, recognized that back in the Old Testament, and when they started constructing the Tower of Babel, and then he split the languages, because he says if they put their mind to it, there will be nothing that will be withheld from their grasp. Now, in your lives, you might feel like that your lives are so spread out that you're something like just a little teaspoon of butter having to cover a whole loaf of bread. You just simply can't get it together. You can't seem to do all those demands that are on your life. And in fact, your life becomes such a frenzy of motion and activity that it just leaves you exhausted. And I get in that circumstance myself so much. There's a little saying that someone has said that if you aim at nothing, you're absolutely sure to hit it. And so you go into this activity cycle and you may not really accomplish anything. Dick, since you're just walking in the door late, can we kind of prop that door open just a little bit? And maybe someone back there could, if that door will open, Herb, will that open? Do you have a key?
Use the wastebasket.
Okay, I just use the wastebasket there. It'd be good enough for Ken's tape recorder. Maybe we could, if we can get it open. It gets kind of warm in here, and for some reason, ventilation doesn't seem to handle the system here. So I would like to interact with you today on how you can focus your energy on that which really counts. And the first thing, of course, that you have to have in that circumstance is that you must learn to set priorities in your life and to set some objectives and then be able to follow through on them. And this really relates to me. Back in that time of 60 and 61, when I had just come on active duty with the Air Force, I was in a frenzy of activity. I was doing so much that I hardly ever saw my son Steve. I'd work 40, 50, 60 hours a day, a week. If you can get that in a day, that's a new kind of day. But I'd work just around the clock almost as much as I could. I was involved in every possible activity, religiously and otherwise, on the base. And I just found that I was meeting myself coming and going, not getting sleep, and running my body system down, until finally God one time just put me down. I got sick. I got the flu. But it was more than the flu because I was just totally exhausted. And it knocked me out for about a week. And then for another week, I tried to go back to work and couldn't. And God, through that little incident, told me that my body will only take too much, so much. And that I had to restrain myself and focus my energy. And then when I went to my next assignment, I just totally cut back and determined what I was going to do and why I was going to do it. We didn't just cut back and quit, but we focused our energies by setting some priorities. And for instance, one of those priorities, I went back to get a master's degree and was going to school. And so one of the priorities that I set was I would have time daily in the Word and prayer before I hit the books at all. I just made that a rule of my life. No matter what the circumstances were, no matter how much pressure there was, and God honored that. And there were some other things I did, and I may bring them up a little later on as we're talking about some things. Now let's talk for just a moment about the decisions that you make in your life. First of all, every decision that you make is based on one of five things, and I've listed those out. It would be based on habit, which means you do it just because you've done it, and you keep doing it, and you don't even think about it. Habit is very, very good if it is working for you. Habits are one of the best things humanity has, because if they're properly trained, it will keep you doing things that we ought to do, things that are right. But if they're wrong habits or wasteful habits, then they hurt you. But most of us do go through most of our day simply by habit. The second thing is we do it on urgency, fear. You know, why do students study the night before an exam? Well, it's a sense of urgency and fear. And there's a little booklet I list at the last here. It's called The Tyranny of the Urgent by Charles Hummel. It's from Ivy Press, cost about 15 cents. And as you look at that book, you find out that most of us operate on not what we ought to do, but just because we're forced in it because we didn't plan or some other reason. Another thing is just desire. Lust is a word. Now, I don't mean lust in the moral sense, but just that we want to do it. A funny thing happened to me, which really showed my own lack of discipline in many areas. About last week, last Monday, I had an appointment at 10 o'clock. And I had from 9 to 10 to do quite a bit of work. So I decided I like to have some music in my room while I work. So I just went up and I flipped on the tape recorder, and I've got a little speaker down there. And I walked down, and I said, you know, there's something wrong with this for weeks, months. It doesn't come out in stereo. You know, I'll bet I know a little thing's wrong, so I padded back upstairs. See, this is all the way down, back up there. Back upstairs, went and looked, checked something, went down, tried it. You know, I spent an hour running up and down stairs, changing little wires, fiddling around, and I kept like, oh, this is stupid. I said, I'm teaching next Sunday on priorities and stuff, and here I am. I've got work to do, and I'm running up and down stairs. Well, it'll only take about 5 more minutes, and I... You know, you just get out of control. And you know how that is. When you operate just on what you want instead of what you ought. So lust doesn't have to do with moral things. It has to do with what you want in your own life, and you want to do it now and you don't want to wait until later. Have you ever had to buy anything new and try it out? Somehow, you know, you did without it for 5 years, but somehow the next 3 hours have got very important on that little item. Just to get it all set up and ready to go, and it just sort of wipes you out. That's what I mean, desire. Expediency. Sometimes we do things the wrong way at the wrong time because it's expedient to do it that way. That is, there is a better way to do it, a better time to do it, and perhaps to do it more thoroughly. But we operate on just getting things done on the basis of expediency, sloughing things off. How about your walk with God, just that daily time in the Word? I was going to put this in a prayer letter, and it'll now end up on tape. But here recently, one evening, I was watching TV, and I very rarely watch TV. But I got started on this good movie. And you know what happened? 12:15. You know, from 10 to 12:15, a little over 2 hours, shot in the middle of the night. I was tired, and it struck me at that point in time that I had not had a time with God that day. I had not even read His Word. I said, you know, that is ridiculous. So I went upstairs and sat down. The whole family was asleep and started reading the Bible, but it really wasn't what it ought to be. It was more a legalistic thing. You know, I had 10, 15 minutes and just to kind of get it done and write something down in my little devotional diary. But I was deeply convicted because I had let something so of just absolute 99 on the list, if even that, I don't think it fits on the list, crowd out a thing that should have been one for that day. And God really taught me something through that. It says that you know, I am just not that disciplined when it comes down to some of the most important things. And God always seems, when I'm doing some stuff like this, sharing with you, you know, and giving you all the big guidelines on how to run your life, bring some things into my own life to show me what I must do myself. And it's a constant battle of concentrating on what is the most important. And so if I can move it into the habit category, not that I want to do it by rote, but that I do it regularly and just make it a part of my life, then that's what will really count. And of course, the last thing is to do it by direction or by choice. That is, you choose to order your life in a certain way. And so that is what we want to help you with today, to choose to order your life. And of course, then all of us come into that little thing that we call the time crunch. And every one of us have it. It doesn't matter whether you've got a lot of time or a little time. If you've got nothing to do in the entire day, seemingly something will always come up to occupy all the time with the least important things. I don't know whose law that is, but it's something that always happens. What's that principle called? Parkinson's law, that all we have to do expands to fill all the available time to do it. So it doesn't matter whether you just have to mail a letter that day or you've got a great deal to do, it'll take all day to do it. Unless you start ordering your life in some fashion. Now we have to fit, of course, into what God's objectives are. And so what I'd like to talk about is the idea of objectives and priorities. Now it's very, very important to differentiate between objectives and activities. And I think we all know this intellectually. But to put it into practice is something else. If you, just for a week, keep track of all the activities that you are involved in and do, and then try and figure out what your objective is from watching the activities, like someone just watches you for a week and tries to figure out your objective, what would it look like? What are your objectives, by the way? Do you have anything set down just on a regular basis that you intend to do? Any priorities that you operate on? When you don't have time to do something, what goes first? Because that's the way you find out what your objectives are and what your priorities are. Okay, now, priorities are those things that if given a choice of five things, you do it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Objectives are that which you intend to accomplish over a period of time, and from those you set your priorities. So just setting your priorities is not sufficient. You have to figure out what is your objective, and activities should relate to your objectives. You say, well, if you're a mother and you have some teenage kids like I do, you feel like you ought to be a chauffeur, a bus driver. You're just running people back and forth and all. You say, boy, what a waste of time. Well, then I say, now, what is your objective? Well, my objective is to serve my children in some way. Well, that's not a bad objective. So maybe the bad attitude we get, and I think parents occasionally do have a bad attitude about that. You ever notice that? You know, the 3-hour, one day Mary said, I made 8 trips today, round trips to this place and that, all around Colorado Springs. Well, you do get tired, but yet it fits into a very vital family objective, to influence and to help our children. So that may not be bad. And if we knew that that was our objective, then we wouldn't feel bad about that which maybe we don't always like to do. So let's talk a little bit about objectives and types of objectives. First of all, I've already talked to you about God's objectives, reaching the world and you in the image of Christ. Now, if I were you, I would think that I would want to somehow have some relationship to God's objectives. That's what the Christian life's all about anyhow. So somehow I ought to have some relationship to God's objectives. And so, let's first of all just look at some types of objectives that you might have. And I'm going to go over this very, very fast. Long-range objectives. I don't know what long range is for you. For my kids, it's 2 weeks. You know, and for a college student, it might be a year. But for most of us, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 2, 10, 11 years. I don't know. Somewhere down the road that is almost beyond the foreseeable, predictable future for us. And so you can't say what you'll be doing in 10 years, but you can set an objective of what God may want you to do in 10 years. And then we have what I call just intermediate range, a year or 2 years or 3 or 4, whatever it may be. And then short range, which can be anywhere from a month on up to a couple years, depending on the area that we're talking about. Okay, what are the categories of objectives? Okay, we have personal objectives, those things which I want to do personally in my own life. Then there are things that we would call ministry or family objectives. I had it in a little different order here. With the family, what do you want your family to be, to become? What about the devotional life? What do you want it to look like in a couple, 3 years when the kids get a little older or when all the kids leave or whatever your circumstance is? What about your ministry objective? You say, well, I don't have a ministry. Well, yeah, you do. Some kind of a ministry, you have an influence on other people. Your neighbors, you say, well, I don't know my neighbors. That's your influence. You know, they stop next door and say, or someone stops to talk to you and says, now, what's your neighbor's name? Oh, I don't know. So you have an influence. They're the neighbors we don't know. And we have not revealed to them the person of Christ within us. So you have a negative ministry. Every one of us has a ministry, just up to you as to what kind it is. You all have an influence at your work, where you shop, how you interact with people. But, you know, what kind of ministry do you want to have? Why have it by default? Why not plan something that God really wants you to do? And then your job, of course, is very, very important because that occupies, at least for those of you who are wage earners, it occupies a majority of your time. For the housewives, that is your job. You know, so have you ever been asked, wives, do you work? No, I'm a housewife. Doesn't that kind of grate at you just a little bit? And when I see what my wife does, in fact, I have a job that I don't want to do when I go home. I have a list as long as my leg of food and items and all of this when we take the kids and go back up into the mountains to this retreat place here this afternoon. And I know I'm going to forget something. And Mary, she just goes and puts it together. That's her job, and it's the thing she's good at. But we want to consider our job in the categories of where we might want to set objectives. Okay, now, let's think of how we set some objectives. First of all, you might want to think about this. What is your goal? Okay, I'd like every one of you now to just take about 30 seconds and to write down one or two things that over the next couple of years is a goal that you have. Okay, now that I've started you on a little process that I'd like to recommend that you continue. Now, I would recommend setting down goals without first doing just deep, deep thought. I'd like you to write down those things that immediately come to your mind. Okay? It's kind of easy to do. Some of you may not have anyone in mind. So you need to think, now what do I want to become? You know, what in several areas of my life, in fact, I can take a little poll. How many of you, just for the little goals you wrote down, dealt either with your job or your home? Can I just see your hand? Okay, how many dealt with your family? Maybe those are the same. How many dealt with the spiritual area? Okay, now see, the categories that spread out, it depends on what's uppermost in your mind at this point in time. Then I would take those goals that you put down and say, now, are those the right ones? Is something missing? Is there something that really is obvious that should be there that isn't? And one of the best ways to do that is to use two people as sounding boards. One is your husband or your wife. And just say, now here are some goals that I kind of want. Do you have any thoughts on them? Are they right? Because you see, they usually relate to both of you. And then it's good to get one other person who is not a member of your family. And say, now listen, really be objective about this. What do you think of these kinds of goals? Is there something I've left out? Is there something else that I could do? See, just to get a little bit of help to shed a little light in that area. Okay, then I would jot down what kind of goals those are. Are they long range, intermediate, or short range? Some of them are all three, see. You know, and some of them are very nebulous. You know, if I'm guessing, you know, I want to be godly. I want to know more of the Bible. Or whatever it may be. And so you may need to say, well, now, in the short term, how can I start this to moving in my life? Now, I'll get to some things that may help us in that. Okay, now, what are some hindrances? Let's say you've set some goals. Now, those are not objectives. A goal is something that you cross over. You see what I mean? You know, it's the end of the football field. You know, it's something that you put out in the future to become something, to have done this. Your objectives then is somewhat of the process that you will go through, and you may make it in several stages. I don't want to make it complicated, but first let me go on and talk about some hindrances to your development in this area. First of all, lack of balance. There are some of us that are built such that once we start one thing, we focus totally on it to the exclusion of all others. Now, remember that little illustration I gave you on concentration on getting into space? The only way that could be done was to concentrate on about 20 technologies at once and to put them all together. So in your life, there may be two or three areas that you'll have to concentrate on. I mean, you just can't drop the rest of life and put it all down and try and do only one thing. I mean, life does go on, and that's the problem, of course, isn't it? In that life does go on, you can't say, can't kind of get off, and you can't even stop for a weekend. Especially if you've got a family, you know, there're just things going on all the time. So a lack of balance really hurts us. We either focus too hard on one thing and not at all on another, or something of this nature. The other thing that really hinders our growing and reaching some objectives is a pride. pride of experience. You know, people think that you already know this. Just take the area of your devotional life. You know, you've been around a Christian for quite a while, and you want to have a devotional life, and you can't really figure out what that means, how to have a quiet time. But you say, you know, I don't know. I've been a Christian for 15 years. In fact, I've been in this church, you know, for X months or years, and I'm known as a Christian. But, you know, if we can just drop those things and say, hey, would you show me how to have a quiet time? What do? How do you have your devotional life? And just get some help. You know, ask. How many of you men have been driving along and you're lost? And you don't really want to stop at a filling station that was right there. But you wander around for 2 hours and your wife's saying, dear, I think you ought to stop at that service station. No, I know where I'm going. And see, it's that same kind of a pride that keeps us from just, say, asking for help. Perhaps it's your age. Perhaps you once were really walking with God in a vital quiet time and it just stagnated. And it needs to be revitalized. Pride will really keep you from reaching any goals at all many times. Lack of openness. You don't want to try anything new. You know, I don't care if they're wearing middies. I'm not going to. You know, you just don't want to try something new. And I don't blame you a bit, ladies. But, you know, we don't want to try something that is different. But, you know, sometimes the freshness of something new is very helpful. I forgot, I meant to bring it with me this morning, and rushing back to the house from Buena Vista and then on over here, I forgot it. But the NAVS put out a new little booklet called Appointment with God. And it gives four methods of having a quiet time. Did I list that? Okay. That is a goodie. What does that thing cost? Is it a buck? $1.25. And it is really worthwhile. I went through that and it gave me new ideas on my quiet time. It takes you through a month's time. And what it will do is it will help you try each week a different method of having a quiet time. Then you can kind of select out what you want, what works for you. It really helped me, and it put some freshness into my own walk with God. So I'd really encourage you to get that. You can just send for it at the Glen, or if we had a whole bunch, I suppose it's 2 weeks away. I'd like you to try it sooner than that. But the bookstores, I hope, do have those. I believe they do if they have the NAV materials. Okay, a couple other things. Lack of teachability. Another thing is just narrowness, where our life is just so narrow, we don't want to try anything different and outside. Or just complacency. You know, you've heard messages like this 15 times, you tried it once and it didn't work. Or we just become hardened to things. But somewhere along the line, we really need to step out and overcome our hindrances and then go. Now, what are some areas of development that you need to think about? Okay, one is spiritual. Now, in the area of spiritual things, I just think of a few very basic things, just your own personal depth in the Word. The basics of the Christian life, that is, having a devotional life with God. Just praying, sharing the gospel with someone else. And then, in a church like ours, you really learn a lot. But you see, just in learning and knowing the doctrine is not conviction. It takes something else to change knowledge into personal conviction. You say, do you believe, you know, like our lesson last week, I believe in the full inspiration of the Bible. Why? Well, I don't know, I just do. You know, and well, can you tell us why you believe that or why you must believe it? What will happen if you don't believe that? What happens to the Scriptures? See what I mean? Somewhere along the line, we have to transfer bare knowledge down into deep convictions that are based on the Scriptures and on our walk with God. How about your relationships with other people? Do you know that's a spiritual area? And you know, there may be someone right now that you are just on the outs with. Maybe your husband or wife. But maybe one of the kids. But it may be another friend. And those things are spiritual areas that will hinder our growth. Your family. I'm an activist, and I know that I have to really watch that I get enough time with my family. Even when I'm going away now for 2 days, I was thinking, now I wonder how much work I can take with. You know, instead of just leaving that stuff at home in the office and totally concentrating on my kids for a couple days. It's only 2 days. You're supposed to at least take a weekend off sometime. But see, in fact, some people might even call people like me a workaholic. Well, that's a real danger. And it's a spiritual problem. Then another area I might mention, just emotional. Do you get enough rest? Do you need to get enough relaxation to refresh your mind? Do you take a vacation? Take some time off of just things that you do enjoy doing. That is planned on it, just to refresh yourself. Are you developing yourself mentally and intellectually? Now, I don't believe you ought to go into a big deal on that, but I do believe that we as Christians ought to be intelligent Christians. We ought to read a little bit. That's why I always put a bibliography, if I've got some things, in these lessons, to give you some clues where you might go and grab something. And by the way, most of those books are in the library. I just put most of my books on these areas, and I forgot to bring these over, Sally. Is Sally here today? Well, I forgot to bring this little set this morning. But you can check them out of our church library, any ones you want to look at. How about physically? Are you keeping on top physically? It's very, very important, because if you wait until it's too late, your whole system is already run down. And you may be trim, but you may not be physically fit and have stamina. And that will keep you going and allow you to do more. And another area is in the area of the social areas. Can you relate to people? Because you ought to be. Okay, so now I recommend that what you do, first of all, is sort of to go through a little plan like this. You evaluate yourself. Where do you stand first in the spiritual area? And I would recommend first taking just these areas. First, start with just the spiritual area, saying, where are you in the area of Bible study? What are you doing anything? How about your devotional life? Your scripture memory, if you memorize scripture. And then about your job and your family. That is your home. I'd like to just emphasize those three areas to just take a few minutes this week, maybe this afternoon, it'd be a good thing to do, to just jot down about where you stand in those areas. See, a little time of evaluation where you can determine if you are doing some things at all in those areas. Then I would just jot down an area or two that you think you have as gifts or abilities or interests. And then when you put down that little list, say, now what are one or two or three things that I really need now in my life? And then having done that, I would start setting some objectives. Remember you did a little thing on goals, you know, what I want to become. Then you say, now how do I get there? If I want to become a good student of the Scriptures, how do I begin that process? Now, as you're going through this, I want to be available to you by phone, or we can chat sometime. I could give you a little hint on things that I've done or things that I've helped people with in setting some objectives. Because the group is so broad that all I can do is scatter a few comments of what you might do. So I think that get some personal interaction and set those objectives, and then put a list of priorities of things that you can go by. For instance, a set of priorities might be God, family, job, and ministry. That you could put them in that order. You could reverse the ministry and job. It depends on what kind of a job you have and so forth. But let's say now you come down to the crunch of things and you find out that that doesn't work. That you start doing job first and putting God last. So then your priorities on the short term don't work. You have to plan for making your priorities work. So we want to talk a little bit about putting your priorities into practice. Now, first of all, your priorities should fit your objectives. So you need to jot down a couple, three things that are objectives for you personally, and then to get your priorities to fit those. For instance, in the spiritual area, is it really a priority that you get with God on a daily basis? Now, this is the next key thing. Evaluate your time uses. Okay, how do you use your time? And the only way that I know to really be realistic on this, and I did this about a month ago, is to just jot down. Maybe you don't have to do it at work, depending on the kind of job. But I think even there you should, because you want to do better on your job. Jot down on 15-minute periods or even half an hour periods what you did. And you know, you start seeing for that evening use of time, that big TV block or the big other block of whatever it is that kind of occupies your time, and it sort of makes you realistic on what you are doing and whether or not it fits in with any objectives. Because I personally find that I waste a great deal of time by simply not planning what I'm going to do. Now, I don't mean you ought to be a robot, but I think you ought to decide on some things that you would do. So then you block out first the time at your job, the time at meals, and the times that are what I call mandatory times. Times that must be used. You have no way of getting out of them, right? Okay, so that's the first. Then you figure out what time is available. And then having figured out what time is available, yeah, I think we can shut that now and we'll get a little bit of noise. Having figured out what time is available, then you say, now what is a good use of that time? And that's where you start coming back to your priorities. Now, here is the key as far as determining to do something about using your time better and fitting into your priorities. It's very simple. It is a matter of decision. There was a guy out the Glen the other day, and he'd spent a whole day consulting to build a kitchen in. And I said, how'd it go? And oh, great, we got it all done. He said they'd done all the preparation. The only thing they hadn't do is to decide. And once we made a decision to do it, it took us only half an hour. So there is decision that must be there on some of the priorities that you set up. Okay, now some practical how-tos of using your time. First of all, work on some kind of a schedule. It doesn't have to be a detailed thing, and it's just sort of a general schedule of what you're going to do. What is Monday night? What is Tuesday night? What about that hour that you usually spend reading the paper between work and dinner? Could it be used better? Or whatever it is, and that's not for the wives. You are not reading the paper between work and dinner. You're making it. But, you know, what about those times that you, what I call dead times, time that you never do? For instance, with students, the deadest time of the week for a student is Friday afternoon. It's universally wasted by all students. And so a guy or a gal who really wants to use that time can figure a way to schedule it in, because the other times they get forced into doing something. The other thing that I use very regularly, I don't have it here with me, is a little do list. And I just jot down the things that I'm going to do in that day, and then if there are little projects, I'll put them down in the priority, or I'll just jot a priority listing right by them. The other thing is to be flexible, because things will interrupt you. You will not get all done that you want to. In fact, on a list that I made up 4 days ago with 8 things on it, I only got 1.5 done. But I know that they were priority. So therefore, I'm happy with it, and I'll get the others done. The other thing is to help your mate. That is, help each other in your scheduling. Husbands, have you ever thought of giving your wife a private hour or two, where she can just read and study, where you take care of the kids, and to help her? I think it's a good idea, and will really be an encouragement. How about your Saturday? Saturday for most people who have a regular job is generally not used well. We leave a lot of kind of piddly stuff, you know, sort of jobber type things, when maybe you could block your time and use that time on Saturday much better than you do. Okay, so those are just some hints as to what you might do. Now, our time is running pretty close, and so I've got some things that I could share further, but what I want to do right now is to give you a little assignment for the next 2 weeks. Okay, now, I'd like you to set one objective spiritually for a one-month time period. Make it very simple and make it realizable. Whether and it's something probably that you found that you are not doing now. Maybe it's, and if you aren't doing this, this is the one I'd recommend, to have a daily quiet time with God. And set as a goal to have that 6 out of 7 days. You're not a perfectionist. So set of a goal in a week, 6 out of 7 days. Okay, and then you might, after you set that as an objective, list when you're going to do it and how you're going to do it. Just one thing. Okay, then 1 week later, after you've been working on that objective for a week, take one other area and start doing it. Okay, so I'm giving you two. Now, the reason I want you to do that is I want you to stagger the accomplishment schedule. Now, why for that? Because you go home and you list down 10 things. You get it all set. Then you get discouraged reading the list. I can't possibly do that in that time. So I just want you to start on one thing now, today. Work on it for a week. And then next week, start the other and keep the two going. And then I'd like to get a little report back from you on how it's working in the areas that you are working on. And then we'll have a little evaluation in this topic on reality as how this has all gone. And that'll give us a little base for having set up some problems. Now here's a key. Have someone check up on you. Share your goal with someone. Now it maybe shouldn't be your mate because they're struggling with the same thing perhaps. And you might get mad. Did you have time in the Bible? No. You know, did you? But you know, someone that's outside, a little bit neutral, who you say, will you check up on me weekly? So let's try that and see if we can get some of this to work. Let's bow in prayer.